Good evening, everybody, and welcome to the Metaphysical Hour. Tonight is July 22nd, 2016, and very hot here in Arkansas. I don't know about where you are in the world, but it is really hot and humid here. Just like it's summer. It's summer. Anyway, I guess it's normal. A few announcements. Having a lot of quantum healing QHHT classes coming up here in the next months. I have our new level 1C classes next month, August 15 to the 17th, here in Eureka Springs, Arkansas. And then I have a level 2 and a level 1C class in Ireland in September, and level 2 and 1C class in Toronto, Canada in October, and a level 2 class in China, and as well as Malaysia coming up in December. That's just been added. So if that's a new one. So those are coming up. So you can check about those on the websites, as well as next year's calendar is going to be coming up. You know, we're just now starting to add that. We've got some really exciting, actually a very full calendar. I'm getting get tired just thinking about it. But we're going to be we're looking at Australia, England, Dubai, China, Taiwan, the Canary Islands, and possibly Egypt for next year. So stay posted to the websites. That's DoloresCannon.com and QHHTOfficial.com if you're at all thinking about doing QHHT. So anyway, come and join us for these classes. And they're very fun and exciting. And if you're ever looking into doing healing in this manner or helping people out in this manner. Okay, so for tonight, if you would like to call in with questions for our special guest, the number is 1-888-627-6008. That's 1-888-627-6008. And so I would like to welcome our very special guest tonight, and that's James Nussbaumer. So glad to have you, Jim.
Thank you, Julia.
Yeah. Now, Jim joined us, let's see, when did, see, Master of Everything came out?
I believe I joined around the summer of 2014.
Yeah, and then the book actually came out last year, didn't it?
Yeah, about maybe 8 months after that. So
right, know, just, yeah. And so that then that was the first book, The Master of Everything. And then your second book, The Mastering Your Own Spiritual Freedom, just came out just like a couple of months ago, just in time for the Transformation Conference. Right, and so that's what we'll be, well, the two go together, so I was going to say that's what we'll be talking about tonight, but they kind of go together, so they kind of parlays off of the other one. Again, in case, you know, people don't know you and your story and everything, I really, because you have a really interesting story, and one that many, many people, I'm sure, will identify with, and because it's so, you know, it really talks to people at this level of things happen in your life, and that's where, you know, you never know what might happen, and it's what you do with those things that happen that's important, and you never know when opportunity, you know, what it's because you do things with those things. Then that's how you can turn your life around. But to go into that, I wanted to ask, I mean, because that's an important question, because this is how I always start my shows, is when did you get into all of this? You know, it's like, how did you get into all of this? And that's really your story, isn't it?
Yes. Well, in my first book, The Master of Everything, I reveal that in pretty much detail, and I'll recap on that just a little bit. But I write from the principles contained in A Course in Miracles. And for those of you, of people out there that don't know what A Course in Miracles is, or may have heard of it before, but, you know, really don't know. And for those of you out there that do know what A Course in Miracles is, then you will understand. It's a heavy volume, a very deep volume of psychological data written by a woman called named Helen Schuchman, who's no longer living anymore. And this was the copyright was in 1975, but it's now grown all over the world, and there's many other people, which I was surprised when I first came back to reality, which I'll explain in a second, that how many people were actually trying to understand and diving into A Course in Miracles. But basically what happened with me, I'm going to be 59 here in a couple of weeks, and all of my life, I was in the financial services business as a broker, insurance and stocks, bonds, financial planning, that kind of thing. And I spent 25 years in that industry, and I did well for a number of years, but it was a business that I actually loathed. I just really didn't want to be there. I mean, I kind of wanted to be there, but I knew I didn't really belong there, and there was something else. So, you know, with all the, and I've always been one into self-help books along the way during my career. But by that, I want to say, by the way, throughout, you know, my growing up period, which I was raised as a Catholic and from a great family. In fact, my parents are still alive today, and just a great family. I'm the oldest of six kids. And, you know, we've had our ups and downs, but we are we're a very tight family. But I was always the kind of a boy growing up, and then even into my adulthood, if I walked up to a closed door, it said, "Do not open," I would open it, go through it. And, you know, I always ended up getting myself in some kind of trouble somehow by doing that. And so there was always a question mark in my mind about, you know, all kinds of things that go on with life in general and divinity and, you know, being a Catholic, you know, constant in school, 12 years of Catholic education with, you know, religion class all day long and, you know, just the fear of God kind of a thing. And don't get me wrong, I don't regret that upbringing, because I was really in a kind of a liberal kind of Catholic upbringing with the nuns and everything there, who were very nice, and I, you know, I thank all of them for their contribution to my upbringing and everything. But, you know, when I the fear of God thing always struck me, and I would always think, well, how can there really be a God if, you know, little girls are dying of cancer, and which we had two cousins that died away of cancer when I was growing up, and wars are going on all over the world and everything. I just didn't understand, and that kind of stuck with me. And you know, I was always interested in the thought of what really is happening in our minds that people were just afraid to talk about, and afraid to talk about maybe for, you know, being scorned or, you know, so, but times are changing on that. So to fast forward a little bit, when in the financial services business, trying to stay positive and upbeat and into the self-help books that I thought were going to lead me in the right direction, which did, but I never really could put what they were saying to practice. But in all of these books, many famous people too that I've read, I always heard the mention of this publication called A Course in Miracles, and I've never been a procrastinator, but here I would tell myself, well, one of these days I'm going to have to check this out. What is this Course in Miracles? And it really is called A Course in Miracles. It's not The Course in Miracles. And so after 25 years in the financial services business and all of my reading in that time period, hearing the mention of Course in Miracles, I never went to check it out. It was always in the back of my mind, oh, one of these days I'll have to go check it out, which, like I said, is very much, it's not unlike me. It's very unlikely for me not to go check something out. It's very unlikely for me to procrastinate on anything. So anyways, in my 25th year as a financial advisor, I crossed an illegal line, a foolish securities violation, I call it. Foolish mostly on my part, but also foolish on the sentencing judge who sentenced me to 10 years in prison over an amount of money of $100,000 that was totally repaid, and the victims didn't lose their money, but the judge wanted to prove, use me as an example and prove a point on a certain thing, and just it was overtly political, the sentence. And so I went away to prison in 2007, white collar crime, to a state penitentiary in Ohio. And I just I always wanted to write since I was a young kid, and I say in my book, which is true, I wrote my first novel at the age of 11 called Reaching for the Goal, which I was inspired by Fran Tarkenton, the pro football player who was back at that time was passing down positive words and optimistic points of view and things to kids. That was something he was, so young boys that were wanting to maybe excel in an athletic career. And I was always into football too. So I wrote that first book called Reaching for the Goal. And anyways, I stumbled into the financial services business. Didn't really want to be there, but the money was starting to be nice. And so I was stuck there and just kind of caught up. And I made this mistake in my 25th year. So when I went away to prison, I decided, you know what, I'm going to just go back to writing and doing what I always wanted to do, what was always in the back of my mind. Still not knowing what A Course in Miracles was, and didn't know that I was going to write about the lessons and the principles that's contained in that text. I had no idea that that's what was going to happen. One thing led to another while I was in prison, and I won't go on too much about that because that's really contained in the first book. Mm-hmm. But I, after about three, maybe 4 months in prison, I stumbled into A Course in Miracles, which is a great story how that happened.
It's a great story. Yeah.
And I just opened it. It actually fell on my foot in the library, and I was like, I picked this book up, and I pulled it off the shelf, kind of, you know, this odd kind of thick book, and I was looking for something to help me, and I had just gotten out of the hole after 11 days and witnessed a murder while I was there, and I was just beat up and ragged. I was new to prison. I just needed something, and so I pulled this fat kind of blue book off of the shelf, and it fell down to my foot. I picked it up, and the faded gold lettering on it said A Course in Miracles. And right there, as I was looking at that, I just got nervous and excited and said, so this is what you are. And I just checked it out of the library and took it back to my bunk area and kept it for as long as I could and studied it and started writing. And one thing led to another, and I realized I got a book coming here. So one thing led to another after that, and the second book, that which is out now, called Mastering Your Own Spiritual Freedom, after I was done writing the first book, The Master of Everything, which, by the way, I had written by hand in ink pen and on legal pad and transferred it to composition journals, which would be my equivalent of computer entry because there's no computer in prison. And then later I would arrange, while I was still in prison, to have typing and editing done on the outside. This was before I contracted with Ozark Mountain. So when I was done with the first book, though, The Master of Everything, I knew the name was going to be The Master of Everything. It was coming to me loud and clear in my mind, this pure thought that that's what the name of it has to be. And I was kind of sad when that job was over with in prison. I'm like, what am I going to do now? And I was in the last chapter rewriting, and I finally come to the end. I said this to myself, this is as far as I'm going to get now without a computer. And something was telling me I need to move on. There's more to go. And so I immediately just started writing the second book. Something inside of me was urging me to keep writing. And that writing of the second book went real quick because the first book was kind of got me in the groove and the momentum going. And so I call this second book, Mastering Your Own Spiritual Freedom, is the companion to the first book, Mastering Your Own Spiritual Freedom. The first book, Mastering Your Own Spiritual Freedom, is really close to me, kind of like a firstborn child would be to you. And the second book is close to me just as well as another child. And I often tease around with people that ask me, I think I don't know if one's a son or a daughter, but they're both family, and there's more books to come too, and you know, more kids on the way that are still in the pregnancy stage, and I'm excited about that.
Right.
So really, after 8 years in prison, I finally was released by a judge who came out of retirement to replace the judge that sentenced me. And the judge that sentenced me wasn't going to budge. As long as he was on the bench, I was going to stay in prison for the whole 10 years that he had sentenced me to. But this other judge had came forward. And by that time, I had already, about 6 months before this, I had contracted with you great people at Ozark. And I was still in prison while my book was being edited by Ozark's editors and on its way to print and all of that. And the book was on the market, actually out on Amazon, and my lawyer and us forwarded all this that I had done and where I was going with my writing onto this new judge that actually came out of retirement to fill in for a while, and he was really kind of knew that I should have not been in prison for that long, and he came forward right away and he got me out of prison. And so this was in March of 2015. And so here we are now coming up on about a year and a half.
Yeah.
And it's been pretty exciting being outside here now after 8 years in there.
I think let's go ahead and talk about that. And then I want to get to the book. How does it feel? What are the, I know things have changed a lot in those 8 years, and then you've been out for a year and a half. How are you adapting, and how's it coming?
Well, I'm adapting pretty well. It's coming along slowly, but you know, like human nature, we're all impatient, and I'm quite impatient too, that things aren't going as quickly as I'd like them to be. Mm-hmm. But coming out of prison after 8 years is a little more tougher than I thought it was going to be. At first, you know, you come out and you're anxious to get things going. But I really, the computer situation has changed so much, and there was no computer whatsoever in prison. So I, you know, was out of touch with everything that was going on, and I just had to relearn everything, and which is coming along okay, because I'm a quick learner. And but you know, when I went to prison, I lost everything, you know, financially, and I was divorced, and just much of my family was kind of upset and didn't know how to take what had happened. But when I came out of prison, I was very fortunate to have some very close family members, three sisters actually, that really stepped forward and helped me out quite a bit. And a really good friend of mine who helped me while I was in prison, who lives in Florida right now. In fact, he just turned 70 years old. He's a little bit older than me. His name is Ron Skeen. And Ronnie wrote to me 3 times a week while I was in prison, sending me envelopes, postage embossed envelopes, because we couldn't buy them, enough of them in there. There was a limit on how many you could buy, but your people could, on the outside, could send them to you, and they had to be embossed. You couldn't use postage. But I needed that to correspond with publishers, which is how I found Ozark. And so anyways, Ron kept in touch with me and helped me out with what I needed on the outside. And he's the one that sent the journals in to me to write. I had to work that out with the administration people at the prison system to allow me to have these things sent in. And so, you know, I haven't seen him since I've been out yet, but
really?
He's in Florida. Pardon me?
Really? You haven't seen, but you saw him a lot when you were inside.
Yeah, he came to visit me all the time, but I had just been so caught up with what's going on and him too, but we've talked on the phone all the time. But Sunday, the day after tomorrow, he's in the Orlando, Florida area. I'm leaving Sunday morning to go down to stay with him and his wife. And we've got 3 days in a row of great golf planned in the heat of July in Orlando. So it's going to be a great reunion. Last time he saw me was when he came to visit me in prison. Maybe it was probably a few months before I was released. So it's been, you know, going on 2 years since I've seen him. But so that's going to be great. And but to answer your question, I'm fortunate that I've had some support from people, you know, certain people that you think are behind you in life, you know, they've let me down and you know, didn't stand behind me, but they have their own reasons for whatever. And but that's just the way life is, you know.
Right.
We're in a world full of judgment, and we all make mistakes, and we all need to learn more about the way I feel. We all need to learn more about what forgiveness really is, which is looking beyond the errors that we make. And I'm not talking about denial. I'm talking about just looking beyond the errors that we all make as human beings, because we're not human beings for too long in this world. As we get older, we find out how fast time's going by. And that's mostly what my second book, Mastering Your Own Spiritual Freedom, is about, is learning how to not just forgive other people who have wronged you, but to forgive yourself and then move on, and to not judge. I mean, we're always going to judge, but if we can minimize the amount of judgment that we place on ourselves and the rest of the world, if we can all do that, it brings us together more whole. And I think that that's what the second book is really about. The first book kind of might upset a few people, which it did, because it was a little out of the ordinary and non-traditional to different religious views that people have. But I think the second book, when people read it, it's still a little non-traditional too, very non-traditional to normal religious beliefs. But it kind of can help people see that, you know what, now I get what he said in the first book. This is making sense.
Mm-hmm.
And we're all just afraid to admit these things. So it's about things that we just are afraid of. And, you know, there's a chapter in this book about the Antichrist, which, you know, how through all these movies we've seen, oh, that's the Antichrist. Oh, this is the Antichrist who killed Kennedy, the Antichrist. But the Antichrist really is not just a human being. It's just a part of our own thought that's not real. It's just perception that we make. That, you know, we think of things so often that just aren't real. And so I describe in that about being the Antichrist.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting what you did there. Yeah, that was really cool. I'd never thought of it that way.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, we're just so in this world. If my readers who are reading my stuff right now and really liking my blogs and in addition to my books and everything, you know, they're seeing that, you know, really, hey, this is, you know, we really aren't the body that we are in this world, you know, and we proved that at the Transformation Conference when I met you there out in Eureka Springs,
mm-hmm.
that how many of us just came together and it was like, you know, we really weren't looking at each other while we were there as, you know, hi, Julia, it's you, the body, and hi, Jim, and all the other people that were paid, bought tickets to attend and all of that. Oh, they were so into that. And it was just, they were just so glad that they came there. For example, one woman said that she put her foot down to her husband and said, I'm going to this conference. I don't care about you. I'm going. And she came to it. And she said that she was so glad that she did, because she was so uplifted by what we all had to speak about and, mm-hmm. and you know, everything. So my point about that is that we're learning as time goes on is to kind of take the body out of the picture as much as we can about who we are. And that's really what I write about. And if we can leave judgment aside and learn how to, you know, forgive in the right way rather than condemning or judging, just forgiveness, just overlook things. And I don't mean it's okay for someone to go out and commit murder and say, oh, let's just overlook that. No, that's not where I'm coming from, but because that's something, an act of the body. Forgiveness is just overlooking the spiritual, the aspect of it, of us that just wasn't in touch with our spirit, that made us do these things. And I talk about that quite a bit when I first in the first book, which led into this book, when I first ran into A Course in Miracles, how when I had to return that book to the library because I was I was renewing it for too long of a time. They wouldn't allow that. There's, you know, rules in there. And course, if you violate those kind of rules in prison, that just puts you in a hole again. And believe me, going to the hole is not where you want to be. So, you know, I was being moved to a new location to be housed in a section which was more appropriate to my age, the senior housing area, which is age 35 and over. Which I finally got that move because I was in with some kids right out of high school, and it was just, they were up all night and just the gangers, you know, just filled with gang and violence. And I was 50 at the time, 50, 51, about the time this was going on. And I went to my new bed location, and believe me, A Course in Miracles is not everywhere in prison like the Bible is. The Bible is everywhere, you know, over here, over there. It's there for you to you don't have to buy one. There's a Bible everywhere. And so I was moving into my new bed location, and I picked up this towel off of the locker I was assigned to, and to keep it simple and make a long story short, because I explain it in detail, I was just surprised and shocked when I lift up this towel. Was an almost untarnished version of A Course in Miracles. And so I kept that. I was just shaking and nervous when I saw that. And so I kept that buried in the bottom of my footlocker when I worked out a deal with the librarian to get the other one back in my possession, which was yellow, nicotine stained. And because of theft and everything, I thought, well, I keep this library version for my study while I'm in here, and keep the new one that I found, almost new, buried into my footlocker in case this one is stole, because when you like something so much in there, they want to take it from you, even guards and other inmates. So, you know, out of just protection and worrying about and judging others is that they're going to steal this from me. And I'm just in with a mix of people where that's all you do is judge and condemn one another. So, but yeah, my journey with A Course in Miracles has been really, really tremendous to me. And I've got so, so much more material that I'm excited about. But it really takes the reader to a supreme knowledge of their own in all my material, to know themselves beyond the body that they are, and can help people that are in doubt about what it is they really want to do in life, or if they're stuck in a career situation where they really don't want to be, can give them the strength to look deep inside themselves and do what it is they really want to do in life, which live life on their own terms, which I call your true free will, which you cannot live your true free will unless you can't live something that's and pretend it's your true free will. You can't make up a true free will, because only God, the one mind of creation, he created your true free will. So if you're trying to live something that he didn't create, if you're trying to live something that's not your true free will, it's never going to be your true free will. It's never going to be what you want to be, because it was never created. So when we can learn to live into our heart and to what we really want to do, even though we're impatient about things, at the stage where I'm at right now, it can be difficult, but we have to just stick with it and do what we really feel we're destined to do, and therefore, you know, living your true free will and going after what it really is that you want is living a life of inner peace and inner freedom.
Right, and I just think it's so beautifully poetic that you know, they chose prison, literally, to stick you in, to represent your confines, so that you could really use that as your example to show everyone. And then so that when you get out, you really have that to be able to, have you seen, I mean, were you, I'm just wondering, I'm having a difficulty. I don't know if I'm having difficulty. I know what I'm trying to express here. 'Cause it's like, how many people, are in prisons of their own without actually going to prison, you know, is what I'm trying to say. And, But you're able to show them, because here you're saying mastering your own spiritual freedom. I mean, there are, you know, they're in prisons without even realizing it. like what you're right. saying, you know.
Right. And that's the point that people, the serious readers of my book will get, is that my physically actually being in prison is a parallel to the prison yes. that we all live with. Mm-hmm. In, you know, the prison of our bodies that we're, you know, the impatience that I just mentioned that, you know, we all get that I'm experiencing and the prison cell of our own body, you know, but when we can, once again, there's where forgiveness comes in. If we can look beyond the body, we go to an inner self that's really our guide, a spiritual guide, so to speak, within us. And I use traditional terms, and so does A Course in Miracles quite a bit, use traditional terms like Jesus and Holy Spirit and God, which I use also in my book. But A Course in Miracles is not Christian. It just uses traditional Christian terms to make it feel acceptable to people, more understanding, because it's something that we've always talked about. So, you know, for example, the Holy Spirit, we, in traditional terms, we think it's just, well, in the Catholic religion, for example, and I'm not saying anything against them, but the Holy Spirit was always portrayed as like a the white dove, you know, outside of you, a spirit that was coming outside of you, or something you need to pray to outside of you that's going to link you to God. Well, no, the Holy Spirit is really your natural self inside that's linking you to the reality that you are, which is not the body, linking you away from that illusion. You know, for example, my guide, you had mentioned in prison, you know, my guide, the Holy Spirit that I call in my books, and I use that because A Course in Miracles uses that. But also, being raised a Catholic, the Holy Spirit is a big name there, so it was good for me to keep using that terminology. But, you know, my guide, while I was in prison, had taken me on, you know, really some unbelievable cuts. You know, in some high roads and some mountains that, and through some very rocky and rough places that, you know, even at breakneck speed, and it was just a path that God had led me on, and I portray the Holy Spirit in my Mastering Your Own Spiritual Freedom in this book as one chapter of the Holy Spirit, which is really my natural self, him and I on a tandem bicycle together, where, you know, he's in the lead and I'm just on the back following the lead. And so that's what I was doing while I was writing. But while I was in there, and with, you know, with all the madness that was going on in prison, he was just taking me on this tandem bicycle ride beyond all of that. And it's, you know, and he would just keep, if I would get tired, he would just turn his head and back on me on the back of the tandem and said, just pedal harder, keep pedaling. And that's kind of what we need to do with the prison of our own self that we're in when we face those impatient times and those times of doubt. And, you know, when we're always thinking something and judging people about something, we're usually wrong about what's in their heart. I mean, almost always we are. You know, have you ever thought something about somebody that was saying something about you or something, and you know, it really wasn't what you thought. And so, you know, but, you know, often we worry and, you know, we become anxious and, you know, asking, you know, where am I going in this world? Where, you know, where are you taking me? You know, God, we might say, like we're yelling and screaming up to heaven. Where are you taking me? No, he's not up there. There is no up there in infinity and eternity. There's no up or down. There's no conflict either. So he's not taking you anywhere. It's within you. So if you can drop that outside figure of God, just drop it. Forgive yourself for even thinking that way. He is not up there in heaven on a cloud, sitting on a throne, pointing the finger at the bad. No, he's not. He is you. He is in you. He is you. And at the conference, I liked what... refresh my memory, the man from New Zealand who I really liked.
Blair, yes.
I'm sorry, I forgot his name because I really, really liked him. And his philosophy was to, and his instructions to people was, you know, you say to yourself, I am God. But see, that's so hard for us to say because we think it's egotistical, but it's not. So the own ego in us that really is the one that doesn't want us to feel as God as one, that God is within us, the ego in us still wants us to think that God is out there, but the ego really is unreal. It's an illusion. And that's the ego that makes the part of us, the ego-based mind that makes up all these things in our mind when we judge people that really aren't happening, but we judge it to be that way. Mm-hmm. And it's the same with nations being upset with other nations and the problems in the world. So is that kind of the more forgiveness we learn to do, and the real way of forgiving is overlooking these things and come to grips on what we're really all about, which I see starting to happen. You know, then that's going to bring us more towards peace in the world. But you know, and that's considered healing and gifts of healing and acceptance of joy. And you know, that's what I would experience while I was in prison. And the same that people can do now that physically aren't in prison but feel that they're in prison to their body is when, you know, when something good happens to you and you feel just a good vibe or something, you know, you can just stop and accept it as, you know, a treasured gift, and don't go backwards on it, because right there where you are, you've reached a plateau in your mind. Oh, I just felt good about this. Okay, I'm going to stay right here and move on from there. And what you're doing is moving beyond your own doubts, your own judgments, your own fear, and your own doom and gloom about yourself.
Right, because you're there for a reason. Like you said, well, it's your own body, or it's that situation. You may feel stuck in that situation or imprisoned in the situation. But you're there maybe to learn something from it. And so it's, you know, so it's like you're saying, see it from a different perspective maybe, or something. And as soon as you start looking and viewing things like what you're saying in these different views, then maybe that's when you start learning what it is that it has for you to learn.
Yeah. And, you know, like I mentioned, we're always judging people for, it seems like, you know, the ego part of us, which is not real, it's not our real self. It's a conflicting thing within ourself. Some people have said to me, have messaged me on Facebook, and I've had some conversations with other people that have said, is the ego, do you think the ego is the devil? No, because there is no devil. There is no devil because there is no hell, because that would mean that there's two eternities, and eternity is just one. And God is one, and God does not have conflict. He is one whole thing. So to say that there's a devil and he's in hell, like we were taught to believe, and there's a hell in eternity, and there's also a heaven in eternity, that would either mean there's two eternities or there's one eternity that's split in two. Well, if there's no conflict in eternity, how can eternity be split in two? And the same with infinity. Infinity is infinity. There's no, you know, good or bad or right or wrong or how far away or whatever in infinity. It's not split in two. It is what it is. And, you know, so it kind of seems like, you know, those who want to suffer, you know, loss, and, you know, no one, you know, wants to be perceived as doing things wrong. But so when we feel as though we're on the wrong track and want to get on the right track, but, you know, and we got people in our lives hounding us or whatever trying to push us to do things we don't want to do, you know, then we just need to like back up a little bit and say, hey, you know, I felt good yesterday. I was at this plateau. Why did I take myself down from that? Because we're all in a hurry and impatient to get there. But if we go with what's inside of us, what's really inside, we're going to be okay. Nothing's going to happen bad to us. You know, what's the worst that can happen to any of us? Well, the thing that we're mostly feared of the most, death. Mm-hmm. And death is not really death, but we all like to say that. Sure, we all like to say that, you know, oh yeah, well, I know death is nothing to worry about because it's, you know, someone dies, they say, well, there, he's at a better place now. And, but do we really, really believe that? Yes, we do. But the ego in us wants to take over and make us fearful. Well, we know he's in a better place who passed on. We just leave someone's funeral or whatever. But then we think about it to ourselves. Oh yeah, but I, you know, they're in a better place, but you know, they're in heaven. But you know, it's, it goes back to the thing that, you know, everyone says that heaven's a great place, but no one wants to die to find out, to go there and find out. you know, in, but if, you know, and I talk about the judgment, you know, even, you know, we constantly like to hear. We don't want to, I mean, a certain part of us, I don't want to say like, but a certain part of us likes to kind of raise our eyebrows in a kind of a exciting way when we hear of somebody that's done something wrong. Like when I was sentenced to prison for 10 years, it was all over the papers that Judge Sinclair brought me to my knees, and the papers just seemed to love that. And, you know, so it's like, you know, we, you know, isn't other people's dirty laundry, you know, something that we, a part of us kind of like to see, a little part of it. We do. We, oh, that's terrible that happened. But for people maybe we don't like, and something like that happens, we say, well, yeah, no, you know, there's his dirty laundry. It, you know,
maybe it somehow makes our woes seem a little bit less woeful or something.
Yes, it does. Or it makes us feel like, well, you know, he got caught, so I'd rather him get caught than me. But see, that kind of thinking, that's the ego in us.
Right.
It's the ego-based mind. And so we talk a lot about the ego in both books. And I've had people tell me that that makes a lot of sense about this, the ego thing, Jim, that you're talking about. And, you know, but, you know, it's like what once seemed to be like big problems for us, you know, or mistakes, really aren't really that big of problems at all. You know, my main goal was, you know, while I was in prison, and I say about taking, you know, one plateau at a time, is I was just so involved with this writing that I was doing, and I just knew that I was going to find a home somewhere to publish my books. And then, you know, finally towards the end of my sentence, after 8 years of writing to publishers week in and week out and continuing my writing, I landed upon Ozark Mountain, which I'm so happy with. So, you know, in the process of getting there, I took one plateau at a time. I call it my climb out of hell. And that's what kept me going. But that was what was in my heart. And to answer your question a while ago that you said, had this not happened to me, my own physical prison, and I had not have been sentenced to a 10-year prison term, I would have never took on this writing task. Mm-hmm. And I probably would have never stumbled into A Course in Miracles. And even if I would have, before I went to prison, said, oh, you know what, I'm going to have to go down to the bookstore and check out this A Course in Miracles, because I ran into Wayne Dyer mentioned it in his book. I'm going to have to go do that. Well, if I would have done that, I would have looked at a few pages and said, I can't understand this stuff. This is crap. And I'd put it down and it had been on the back of my bookshelf somewhere. Yeah. So, mm-hmm. You know, while I was in there, and I knew it was in the back of my mind, and I never did research it, and I stumbled into it, and I had the time to do that, and it just brought things out of me without interference from the outside world. But I had the interference of all the volatile and violent stuff going on in the den of the cell block, and so that kept me. That was my safety outlet there. And A Course in Miracles may not be for everyone, and I'm not saying that it should be. A Course in Miracles is just one curriculum of universal spiritual study, and and I want to make this perfectly clear too, because I need to always kind of disclose this. A Course in Miracles never claims to be a religion, and and is not a cult, as some people who like to judge, like most of the world does, I just explained about, try to blame A Course in Miracles as being some kind of a cult. And that's totally not true, because a cult, you know, requires an idol, and there's no idol to A Course in Miracles. They don't, it doesn't ask you to send it money, because there's no place to send it. It just is a book, and there's no involvement, or there's meetings of course by people like me that talk about their own books. But you know, there are other there are famous people that write from A Course in Miracles too, along with myself, that their take on it is, oh, it's pretty much on the same lines, but a different kind of a take, a different way of looking at things. So it's not you know, for everyone. But had I had not had gone to prison and faced with 10 years, even if I would have went to prison and would have received a normal, a more appropriate sentence, let me say, a more appropriate sentence, like maybe 6 months and then a couple years of probation or something like that, I still would not have dived into this pursuit that was in my heart that I always wanted to go after. So now I'm going after that, and there's my impatience that I have to like get a grip on. It's not going as fast as I want to, but when I think, you know, hey, it hasn't even been a year and a half yet since I've been home, so but it's going good. I'm getting tremendous feedback from my social media people, which is the start of everything, and I've talked a few times locally, and plan to excel on that and go really more around the world. That's what I really want to do and really want to go to. But I guess I have to take baby steps towards getting there, at least for now.
Yeah, yeah. It starts building. It builds gradually. That's how it works.
Yes.
It's just what it does. Yeah, you just keep doing what you're doing. You just keep touching people's lives and their hearts. And by you setting the intent, you just now put it out there. You just keep letting people know, and you put it out there. And when they hear that and they go, oh, okay, then they'll invite you.
So. Yeah, yeah. And but it's, you know, spiritual freedom really is something that so different than what I was raised learning. And like I'd already said, I have no regrets against my upbringing, because it was a good upbringing. And,
well, it's what brought you to where you are, and it's also what's helping you to be able to identify with people who are in the same situation or wherever, and then so you can relate.
Well, yeah, you know, spiritual freedom, what this book mainly is about, because like I said a little bit ago, the first book, The Master of Everything, in fact, there's a couple of people close to me, one in particular, that really got upset when she started reading my first book. Actually, when she was reading the first part of it, she was called me and says, oh, I'm loving this. I just love this. And then after she got about halfway through, she started maybe considering me the Antichrist.
Oh, boy.
But then she calmed down after a while, and we talked about it, and she's okay. But, you know, the whole point of that book really was to raise people's eyebrow and get their dander up a little bit if they were too close to their own ego. Now, I'm not saying everyone has an ego, and I don't. I got an ego just like everyone else, believe me. And but, you know, spiritual freedom, it's not really complicated at all when we know that there is a oneness about us all. You know, and like I had said, in oneness there is no conflict. And when we're upset with someone, that's conflict. But we're going to be upset with someone. And when we know how to settle down over that, and you know, and just understand that, you know, that's just the ego in us, it makes life a lot easier. You know, in the world without the ego, where we're relying on that natural self with inside of us, you know, that is the real world, and it's a choice that we make to accept, you know, what is real. Because, you know, in the second book, I talk a lot about truth, and in the first book too, but in the second book, a lot about truth. And I had a naysayer who just read my second book and wanted to be a naysayer, just kind of wanted to be a pain in the butt critic. Said, you know, you talk about all this truth, but you know, what do you, truth, you know, but he wasn't understanding what I mean by truth. And you know, the truth in us all is really Now, come on, look at it this way. The best way, the truth inside of us all, okay, if you're doing something that you really don't want to be doing in life, but you're doing it anyway, then, you know, you're going against the truth about you. If you actually believe that, you know, there's an old man in a white beard and long white hair sitting on a throne up on a cloud somewhere way out beyond the sun, even though there's no clouds out beyond. I never understood how that could happen anyway. But if you believe that's really where God is and that there's all these people floating around up there in outer space, that's heaven, you know, you really don't believe that. No one really can believe that. And that may come across that I'm making judgment about their beliefs. No, I'm not. But when people really think about that, but it's something that people don't want to admit.
Right. And when, yeah. And then like you're saying, to also the truth is like, you know, being true to themselves, just, you know, in what they are all about and what they want, like you're talking about in the beginning, what they want to do or what they want to be or what they want to, you know, whatever. And, 'cause so many people, we lie to ourselves, you know, oh yeah, I'm happy. I'm happy. And they're not.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, it's you know, sure. I mean, you know, we do things to make a living that we don't, you know, want to do all the time, but we have to pay the bills and that kind of thing. And that's not really what I'm talking about. But, you know, the people out there that know what I'm talking about living your true free will and living the truth about what it is you really want to be doing, you know, what it is, who it is. If you're having a problem in a relationship with, you know, your wife or your husband, and you know you really don't want to be there, well, you've got a choice to either leave the relationship or fix it and make it to where you're getting along, to where you're living by truth and you're one with each other, and you can maybe help each other correct the ego problem. So, you know, you have a choice to either continue living in falsity or illusion, or continue to live your life by your gut, which is, you know, the truth.
Right. Absolutely. Well, here real quick, Jim, before we run out of time, I want you to, can you give people, if they want to find you, can you tell them how they can contact you?
Yes. First of all, my web address is jamesnussbaumer.com. And, you know, there's copies of my books there and my blogs, and there's a contact page where you can leave comments and ask me to get back to you. You can reach me on Facebook, just under James Nussbaumer, or on Twitter, the same thing. I've got a lot of following on Twitter and Facebook. It seems that's just kind of what I like and I'm comfortable with. But, If you leave a contact info at jamesnussbaumer.com, go to that website. In fact, it's on the menu. You just click contact and go in there and make your comments and leave your email or whatever info you want. I'll gladly get back to you.
Super. Okay. Well, we've got about like a minute and a half to 2 minutes. So you have any last message here?
Well, I just want to say that, you know, this radio show you got is doing, I love it. You're reaching out everywhere, aren't you?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Worldwide.
Yeah. And you know, I noticed that, it seems like, are you doing quite a bit like in the UK?
Mm-hmm. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. 'Cause, you know, I had Kevin Moore contact me and he's getting ready to do another interview with me, and mm-hmm. he mentioned something about your show being very popular over there, and then you had mentioned earlier while you were warming up here, we were getting going, how in these different places in the world where things are starting to happen and meetings are starting to be held, and I tell you what, that really inspires me.
Wonderful.
Because I think that's this kind of work that we do, that I write about, and what the publisher is all about, and your radio station is you know, where we need to reach to all the different corners of the world, and you know, not really, and you're not, and not really try to be some kind of a, you know, like we're trying to convert people, because that's not the case. It's just really spreading the love and teaching a little bit about forgiveness and non-judgment and just being nice and friendly with people.
Absolutely. That's what it's all about. Yeah. That's what we do. We just go where they want us to go, where the demand is. So
okay. Well, I'm on your side.
All right. Well, it looks like I believe we're at time. So it's been so wonderful having you with me tonight here, Jim. So thank you again.
The only thing I want to add is when I said convert, the only thing we want to convert is our faithlessness into faith.
Yes, absolutely. That's wonderful. That's a great message. Okay. Well, thank you again, Jim.
Yes, Julia. Thank you.
Sure thing. Okay. And everybody, it's been wonderful. And I'll be back again next week. And we'll see you then. And so, love you all. Good night.